Welcome back to another episode of Sportscastle. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jared.
This week there's plenty happening in local sport. We might start off, mate, the Grasshoppers. They're in a bit of a slump.
Yes, we got the draw, mate. We were down 3-2, and we didn't concede in the second half, but just wasn't our normal high standard. So yeah, we're slipping a little bit.
It's a long way back, mate. When you let in three in the first half, but oh well. The draw probably keeps you just in touch with the finals. It's still there, so doing pretty well considering the step up to B grade, but plenty of work to come in the remaining couple of rounds.
Yeah, that's right. We've just got to keep the guys behind us at bay, mate, and if we get a snip, I reckon we're a chance. So that's all we're aiming for.
Exactly right. And how many weeks are there remaining in the regular season?
Yeah, I've been asked that by a few people. I'm not actually sure because I believe we've played everyone twice. So, yeah, I'd say there wouldn't be many more. So, yeah, I'd say with probably 3 weeks, I reckon, in March the semis will be.
Yeah, right. Very exciting. So, wait and see. Hang on with bated breath to hear how the Grasshoppers go, mate. And yeah, mate. I wonder if if I'll be able to squeeze a cameo in or not. It's going to be the million-dollar question, I think.
That's the question everyone down at Katara Fields is asking, mate.
Yeah, well, you know, we know that it's more likely than Jared Lynch coming, even though he said so.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yes. Kidding. But anyway. We'll move right along, mate. We'll get into the red ball action, a bit of the cricket. Another piece of silverware handed out this week, the NCC Summer Bash. It was the Daniel Arms show, mate. Across the day. Yeah.
Yes, it was. He was, he was simply outstanding, mate, and he really stood up.
I've got to say, I saw that, I'm all four blokes, you know. Giving themselves a bit of a pat on the back for a good effort, but I saw Charlestown shared the Newcastle Herald article that sang his praises today, and when it comes up down the bottom, it'll say Jared Logan and 32 other people have liked this. When I scrolled past it, it said Daniel Arms and 28 other people have liked this. So, mate, it's a bit much, isn't it?
He loves it, I think, didn't he?
He'd
love it or like it.
Yeah, no, he just liked it. But, that would have been over the top. He had loved it. But, as we said, certainly his day, he was the standout there. And you'll see Player of the Year rankings a little bit later on that he was one of the big movers and shakers this week alongside a Merriweather gun. But, he certainly led them well. He got 65 off 51 and wasn't even a hint of what was to come. That was in the semi-finals. He led them home against West with... I think about 14 balls to spare. They got home there against a very strong West lineup, and the Hamwicks just held off the whips from Belmont in their semi final. But probably good fortune more than good management. There's some late no ball dramas and things from the usually calm Sam Webber, and the Pumas shaped up against the Magpies. Jed stuck to his usual routine of losing the toss and was happy to chase. Again, because it wasn't the night game, it made a big difference. Pumas only able to post 104, consistently losing wickets. Matt Webber, 28 from 24, top scored. A few people got starts, but just no one could really go on to help them post that score, and they were in trouble the whole way along, and only just managed to bat the 20 overs out.
Yeah, that's right, mate. But they used a couple of medium paces from what I saw, but yeah, a lot of slow bowling, mate, which really... Yeah, suited them, didn't it? And really made Pumas come unstuck.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think really it was only the one over by Arms and then Madison bowling sort of their medium paces. But the slow bowlers bowled the bulk of it, 16 overs with Wallace, Chillingworth, Pusagala and McGill. And like I said, constant wickets were the key. Sash Pusagala was the main man with 3 wickets, but all the bowlers did admirable jobs. The only one not to pick up a wicket was that man that we talked about, Daniel Arms, but did a good job only going for 6 runs off his over. They certainly had them under pressure very early and looked very ominous at one point when they were 5 for 59. It looked like they might have been bundled out for 70 or 80. But Charlestown, they weren't mucking about. Daniel Arms brought up the victory off the last ball of the 10th over. 3 for 105 they finished. Daniel Arms 63 off 30 balls, 6 sixes. And, mate, that was some of the biggest sixes you'll see. You'd know the scorers boxed out at number 1. One of them cleared that. Another one went 3 or 4 rows back into the grandstand at number 1. And then another one cleared that little hill next to the Newcastle City Pavilion in between that and the grandstand, cleared that and landed on the back crest of it. So he wasn't mucking about, and he made it look very easy. I think the lead commentator I was working with, Dave Redden, was comparing a couple of his shots that are very Darcy Short-esque, and look, Daniel Arms certainly has a penchant for the T20 game, as we've seen there. You know, 120 runs off 80-odd rocks, or nearly 130 runs off 80 rocks in a couple of innings, and it'd be good to see him consistently turn that form into some form in the two-day cricket.
Yeah, it would, mate. He got a start, I think, for the week before against Wall's End, but yeah, maybe it's a sign of things to come, and they're definitely clicking at the right time, obviously lifting their maiden 2020 trophy, which they're probably not traditionally known for, you know, probably perennial semi-finalists, but yeah, just haven't got the silverware, but they've got the monkey off the back now, mate, and yeah, I suppose it's a big confidence builder.
Yeah, it certainly is, mate. And yeah, as you say there, Dan, his last three knocks have all been scores of 60, so which is good because he'd only sort of passed, I think, the 50 mark twice prior to that in the season. So yeah, so he got the first game of the Tom Locker against Stockton, he got a 50, and he also got a 60 against Waratah in the 2-day comp. So good to see him starting to get it against probably a bit higher quality opponents. Even in his previous knocks in the summer bash, he hadn't passed 20, so great to see him finally starting to show that potential that the guys at Charlestown, Healy and the likes have always known he's had.
Yes, that's right, mate. And as Jed said in the press, mate, a lot of local guys, local Charlestown boys too, so they've stuck to their guns and, yeah, they've done well. And I suppose it was just an off day or an off final for the Pioneers.
Yeah, that happens though. You can't be up for every game. So at the end of the day, Charleston were the better side on the day. They played to their strengths and did so very well. And the experience at Hamwicks wasn't quite enough, unfortunately. But yeah, certainly, as you say, quite interesting. Charleston first silverware in some time in any forms of the game. So yeah, great to see them coming back. And it'd be interesting to see if, you know, someone asked me the question during the week whether or not Daniel Arms would go on, you know, if he'd continue this, whether there was a career path. And I mean, I think he's only in his early 20s. He might only be 20 or so, but you know, it'd be quite difficult from here. He might push on, but he's going to need to push through the Sydney path to turn the likes of Nathan Price and those guys really not quite be able to jag those spots. So, I mean, good luck to him if he can, but I mean, we could see Daniel Arms, you know, become the next generation of Steve Mason. Probably a little bit more flashy batsman than Macy, but you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing for Charleston if he was here for, you know, 10, 15 years to come. I'd back them if a few of these guys hang around, himself and Jed, a couple of those other young bowlers, that they could win, you know, they could have quite a silverware cabinet full again, reminiscent of the those old days of Mace and some of those other guys. Help me out with some names here, I'm having a mental blank.
His brother, Rod Mace, Trisley, Marjorie Banks, Prawns,
yeah,
there's a lot of names,
Gold. Even coming on from there, yeah, so, you know, some of those golden eras of cricket where, you know, there was some big hundreds and I think even maybe a double ton at one point posted up at Charlestown, so.
Benny Warmer.
Yeah, correct. That's the name I was looking for, thank you. So, so it'd be great to see him hang on to a lot of those guys. And Charlestown have been known for producing, you know, talent and plenty of it has gone elsewhere. Gone on to play first grade, you know, just in recent years. You've only got to look at, Jesse Major played a bit of cricket there at Charlestown. Your brother, Scott. And a few others yourself, mate. You went off and played first grade elsewhere for a bit. But there's been plenty of them that have left and gone to different pastures. The round mound of sound, Jared Forbes as well.
Yeah, even at the great man, mate, Anthony Stewart, represent Australia, local Charleston boys.
Yeah, well, not quite in the same ilk as some of those guys. I don't know if he's as good a bowler as Jared Forbes or Scott Logan, but, you know.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, but anyway. Well done to the Magpies. You were pretty cock-a-hoop, mate. You were pretty excited about that, so that was good to see, you know. It's about as excited as you get these days now you've got four kids at home.
Yeah, that's right, mate. But, no, I somehow correctly predicted it, so, yeah, I was pretty happy. And, yeah, Pool A, obviously both teams were in Pool A, and I think we touched on it. That was a very strong pool, but nothing to take away from the Rosellas or the Whips.
Yeah, I think we called that when the draw was done, but well done to all those sides that featured. It was three quality games of cricket. on Sunday there. So, I mean, that brings the focus down now. We've got two rounds left of the two-day competition, a number of games wrapped up, or six games wrapped up on Saturday in the two-day comp. A lot of them were, I think, probably three or four of them were 45 apiece over matches, and it's really shaped the ladder to the point now where, I mean, in reality, probably only six sides can make it. We'll just run through the results, we'll touch on any real standout performances. We might try and keep this a little bit briefer so we can talk about the permutations that play out from here. We'll start off, mate. Newcastle City defeated by Cardiff. I don't think there was too many really surprise results across the weekend. I think everything pretty much went as predicted with what we had to work with. The only one, I guess, was Walls End and Charlestown, which Walls End's batting went back to what it was like pre-Christmas, and no one seemed to get the opportunity. I know, speaking to Pricey, he was a bit disappointed that he didn't cash in some more on what was there. But, yeah, I guess that's what happens. You can't always be peeling off tons every week.
No, that's right, mate. And, I think, as we said, if Monty and Pricey, you know, it's been a big year for them too. But, yeah, just really needed someone to take that extra bit and see him home.
Exactly right, mate. We'll come to them in a sec. Obviously, Cardiff chased down Newcastle City's total in about 50 overs, just short of 50 overs. A couple of starts there. Duggan probably stand out with 51, and no real big standouts in the bowling ranks there. Move on to the second game, mate, and feel free to jump in if you've got any standouts that I miss here. Toronto and University played out what was probably ended up being a more comfortable win than expected for Toronto. Jeremy, a.k.a. Jono Ford, by far the standout with the bat. His partnership with Ryan Fenning, they put on a partnership of 93, was really the key to this one. Nathan Hudson did pick up 5 wickets for University, but it was a little bit too little too late by that point. A couple of other bowlers have been a little bit expensive going at sort of, you know, we had a couple of bowlers going at 5 or more and over, including the superstar of Grasshoppers, mate. 5 no balls, 5 wides, and only 1 for 37 off 7, Luke Bird.
Yeah, well, might have explained his absence on Wednesday night, mate.
Yeah, a couple of names I don't really know too much about. You might be able to fill us in. Estall and Ray, or Ray. Interesting to see a couple more names popping up in what's, you know, been a pretty deep lineup this year, so it's interesting to see them popping up there, mate.
Maybe we could do a stat, mate, I reckon, for next week. Who's used the most amount of players in first grade this year? I reckon University would have it covered.
University would be, it's hard to say. Some of those, Stockton have used a few, I think. Waratah and City might have used some as well. But, yeah, you're right, they have quite used a plethora of players as opposed to some of the other teams who have got a fairly solid core. University, the only one that really put up a fight was Liam McKechnie. He's probably been their standout batsman over the last few weeks. But the man to talk about was the spinner from Toronto, Dylan Robertson, 6 for 30 off 10.2. He was the chief destroyer as Union bundled out for 136. A very comfortable 81-run victory in the end. I would have thought, like, even at chasing 217, I would have thought Uni would have been reasonably confident there. But just never got going. I mean, even at one point, I mean, they were 2 for 90 at one point. And then next thing you know, they're all out for 136, and that seems to be the story. Their tail just doesn't wag at all. Considering the depth they have on paper in that batting, they should be doing a lot more than that, and that could be the end of their season, as we'll touch on in a sec.
Yeah, that's right, mate. They had a clutch against Belmont last round too, and they've done it again. So, yeah, Harriet is really going to have to get them to aim up or do something, mate, or, yeah, they'll be kissing a goodbye.
Yeah, exactly right, mate. Next up, Merriweather defeated Stockton. No surprises here, mate. Probably only surprised a few starts for Merriweather, the likes of Moore, McGuigan, those sorts of guys, and Houlihan. Tim O'Neill coming in at the tail. Helped them post a really competitive total. 51 off 35 balls. So, yeah, he certainly did very well there. Stockton only the 4 bowlers used. Stockton then never really looked like threatening in the chase. They lost constant wickets after the opening partnership and ended up 9 for 115, so falling some 77 runs short at the end of their overs. Again, the choice with the ball, 5 for 18 off 14 overs, including 7 maidens, Tim O'Neill. So he's a standout there, mate. Pretty much has won that game. I mean, if he doesn't post that 51, he comes in and posts 15 instead. They might only, they potentially, even Pat Hoolihan there, they potentially only post, a score of 150 or 140. And Stockton might have got a bit more of a sniff because, they're within striking distance. So, a great knock by the season campaigner. He goes pretty handily with the bat for a guy that is coming in at, number 7 or 8 most weeks. He could do worse.
Yeah, he does. I think he's always been underrated as a batsman, but, he pulls the odd score off. A bit like, reminds me a bit of Jace Lawson out of Belmont. They're sort of probably not renowned for it, but they can pull it out when they need it.
Well, he's got a couple this year, I know, that have been, and they've been crucial too. See, I've noticed Jace Lawson, he'll get a couple of scores, but they don't tend to be as much in the balance. Like, he's good for a good 50 or so. But, he got an 88 earlier in the year against City, which was quite crucial again. Again, not necessarily against the top-tier teams, but, he's certainly not the worst batsman. He's certainly not the worst number 8 batsman, and could do a job a little bit higher at times if needed. Right, we'll move right along from that one. We'll have a look about that team that we talked about there, Belmont. They took on Hamwicks. Hamwicks won the toss and sent Belmont in. Belmont didn't even manage to bat out their 45 overs and didn't make triple figures. And Hamwicks, they made nervous work of it, but a quick 540 off 29 balls from Sam Webber saw them home 9 for 99. It's certainly interesting. I know they weren't chasing too many, but some of the knocks were quite interesting scores, mate. Geordie Toby, I don't know too much about this fellow, but you would have thought in a 45 over chase, he got 10 off. Hang on, I just lost my scorecard there, 1 second. He got.
That's not open at all. 10 off 62 balls, mate.
There we go, that's the one, yeah. I don't know what's happened to that there. 10 off 62 balls is not ideal, and as we said, nervous finish, Hamwicks, but they got the points that keep them atop the ladder. Moving on, we've got Waratah. They lost to West. Waratah posted 151 the week before, and that was never going to be enough against West. West were 5 down overnight for about 30 something, and we said that Josh Emmett would be the key, and sure enough, he was. He and young Eden Brichter both brought up half centuries as they didn't lose another wicket in the pursuit of that other 100 or so runs over that they needed from overnight.
Yeah, they're building nicely, mate. I think their probably issue is their starts in their batting, mate. They're doing a little bit of a uni and sort of having collapses in clumps, but they seem to still be winning. So
we're certainly doing. A shout-out to our main man, Pierce Robinson. He was the only Waratah bowler that really put up a fight. 5 wickets and a catch. So there was 5. He took all 5 wickets at Fellmate. I think we might have mentioned it last week, but... yeah, very, very good effort when no one else could get the breakthrough. So certainly got the wood over young John O'Toomey, that's for sure.
Yeah, career day for him, mate.
I don't know about that, mate. I don't know what he's done over in the lovely parts of England that he's from. So, but we'll have a look, mate. The final match of the round was that one we talked about. It's Charlestown versus Walls End. Charlestown 272. Walls End were 1 down overnight. Like we said, a couple of starts. Price 34, Page 40, Montgomery 21, Brooks 37. It's probably the first time he's really got some runs this season, so that's good to see. But, they fell well short. They lost by 73 runs. They really needed one of those partnerships to go on. But I think from looking at this, the biggest partnership was about 53. And then they lost their last 3 wickets for about 18 runs. So, unfortunately, not the result that Walls End needed, and that's... that spells the end of their season, barring an absolute mathematical miracle.
Yeah, it does. And I know Price is kicking himself a little bit, but, he's done so much. And, they just needed, one or two others to go with him during the year in those tight games. But that's cricket, mate. And, hopefully they can finish the year off strongly.
Yeah, I certainly think they will. It'll be an interesting one this week against Cardiff. Both sides really probably mathematically out of contention, but there'll be lots of pride on the line. I know they sit very close in the club championship. The second grade game is very crucial as well. We might have a look at that next week. We might have a look at how the lower grades shape up as we head into those, or maybe into the final 2-day round. But yeah, certainly an interesting one. And yeah, it shapes it. So if we have a look at the ladder now, mate, we are, so I'll just bring that back up in front of me. Yeah. So by my calculations and the stuff that you've provided me as well, mate, I've gone back through and double check, looks nice. But Hamwick's 8 points clear.
Yep, that's right.
From Toronto on 58, so Hamwick's 66, Toronto 58, Charlestown 54, West 51, Uni 49, Meriwether 49, and then we pretty much got the rest. So the exciting thing for me, look, the Hamwick's have all but got minor premiership. They only need one win from here to secure it, being 8 points clear, unless Toronto could somehow jag two outrights and Hamwick's get one, they could come home, but I find that very hard to believe, so I'd be pretty happy to hand the minor premiership to Hamwick's.
Well, they play each other this week, mate, so that could be interesting.
Yeah, again, I can't see Toronto outriding them, so even if Toronto were to beat them, they still sit 2 points behind, or three points behind them.
That's
probably something to really take into consideration, and then Hamwick's finish against University, so they've got two tough games. And Toronto might be eyeing outright that last round, but I mean, essentially, I'd be surprised if Hamwick's got outrighted by either side. So that essentially puts them 10 points clear. So Toronto would need to an outright against Uni, and a win would get them there. But I can't see Hamwick's getting beaten both. But yeah, one win from here, and you're happy to give it to Hamwick's there.
Oh yeah.
So that is the team for me, mate. It's a simple path there for them. For Toronto. They'll obviously be crucially looking at trying to secure a top two berth because they probably don't want to fall down and have to play against Hamwick's in semi-final cricket. So, I mean, looking at them, they'd be eyeing definitely an outright in the last round, and that'd get them to 68. And, I mean, they'd be wanting a win this week as well to go into the finals. If they get a win this week and go to 64, it's going to be quite hard for Charlestown to catch them, because you'd be very surprised if they didn't at least pick up a first innings win against City in the last round. So that's certainly the case. And then we have a look at the guys in the danger zone, I guess. Charlestown, West, Uni and Meriwether. There's only 5 points that separates those teams. Not a huge amount on quotient. Meriwether really probably are the ones that have got to work on that the most. And Charlestown and University have the best there, but there's, again, not much. There's only 0.06 between those three teams and 5 points. Charlestown, obviously, they're having a few points up their sleeve. Let's have a look at their draws. Charlestown do play Meriwether this week, and they finish with Stockton. So if Charlestown can make sure they get an outright against Stockton, that'd be all but enough, I think, with at least a point gained against Meriwether. But I think the form they're in, they'll probably be aiming for 16 points from here and hoping that results go against Toronto. And they can possibly secure a second spot there.
Yeah, well, I think I had Charlestown coming second, mate. So I think, I think they're just going to get a bit of confidence from the last weekend. So, I think they'll end up finishing second for me.
Yeah, and then the other crucial game, there's a couple of crucial ones, obviously, this weekend with those matchups. So Charlestown, Meriwether, Hamilton, Toronto, and Western Uni. So the top six all play each other. So we'll know a lot more after these 2 weeks. Western Uni is the other one. That's certainly got plenty of spice in it, and Uni, well, they're not in great form at the moment, so they're going to really need to pull a rod out of the hat to get anything happening here. And if they lose to West, especially if Charlestown win as well, I mean, even if Charlestown don't win, because they're 5 points behind, they're still going to be 5 points behind, and then heading into that final round fixture, which sees them take on the ladder leading Hamwick's.
Yeah, they'll be pushing up hill, Uni, mate. I think we said it 2 or 3 weeks ago. I think some of those outright, those big days they had where they just batted all day, I think they might come back to bite them, mate.
Yeah, certainly right. The good thing this week is that we really have every game has a bit of bearing. Wallsend and Cardiff, obviously, there's a bit of pride on the line, and 7th and 8th spots, the winner will take, position of 7th, and then it'll come down, obviously, their final round fixtures. But obviously, the other two games, Stockton versus Belmont and City versus Waratah, there's only 6 points, so a first innings win separating 9th and 12th. So if anyone could get the win this weekend, whoever gets the wins will essentially leap up out of that wooden spoon position. So it's certainly very interesting. In terms of it, considering they then all go and take on, obviously, I don't think any of them play each other in the final round, and especially for City and Stockton, who play, you know, Toronto and Charleston, who are two of those top four sides, and will be aiming for outrights in the final round. Yeah, it's certainly very crucial this week that if they want to avoid that wooden spoon, you know, City the most, because they're the one on the set on 17 points at the moment. They certainly need to get a result, but I'm sure Waratah and Belmont will both be aiming for similar things. I mean, Belmont essentially 6 points here and put them definitely safe. Same for Stockton. So some interesting games, mate, there.
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, as you said, both ends of the competition, but I suppose, you know, that's what Marjorie Banks and his committee want, mate. Good hard cricket to finish the year and, yeah, finish off with a bang.
Yeah, exactly right, mate. So we'll fire through that list again and I'll just get your predictions for this round. We'll start with the ones at the bottom of the table. So Newcastle and Waratah.
I am backing Piers's lads, mate, to get the job done.
Yeah, Waratah first innings for me as well, mate. The other one, Stockton and Belmont.
Going with Belmont to get first innings.
I'll go Stockton to get first innings out at Lynn Oval. We'll move on to the middle of the table game, Wallsend and Cardiff Bullaroo.
Going for Wallsend to get a first innings win.
Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see how this one plays out. I wouldn't be surprised to see some aggressive captaincy from Nathan Price if they get themselves into a strong position after day one and they get an opportunity to maybe declare that, you know, if their bowling attack can fire. But yeah, I think Wallsend, I think they'll have the job cut out for them to try and get an outright. So Wallsend for first innings for me. West v University at Harker Oval.
West vs Uni, that's a good game of cricket, mate, but I'm going for the Rosellas to get a first innings victory in this one.
Yes, I'll concur with you there, mate. I'll go the Rosellas at home as well. Charlestown at Merriweather again, mate. I'm going to take your old plea here and I'll back the home side to get a first innings win. Look for another decent innings from Daniel Arms.
Yeah, I'm going to go for the young pups, mate, the Magpies, to carry on their mighty form.
And finally, probably the match of the round, I guess, Hamwicks versus Toronto. Like I said, there's so much on the line in so many of these games. The ebbs and flows, especially with quotient and things and how close everyone is. I think Hamwicks will have enough to get the job done here. And they'll get a first innings win and head into next week's game against University, sleeping a little bit better knowing that they've got that minor premiership wrapped up after a lot of people hadn't predicted to completely miss the finals.
Yeah, I think they'll bounce back from their little hiccup last week in the final, mate. But yeah, I think a first innings win and minor premiership, as you said.
Yeah, lovely. The other thing I will touch on briefly, we won't run through the fixtures, but the under-21s, the under-15s, and the DB Cup semi-finals are all this Sunday. I think they're being played at Learmonth and Townsend Ovals, if I'm not mistaken. So, and then the finals will be played next Sunday, so we'll do a bit of a quick look at the finals next week for those ones. But, yeah, a number of clubs involved, including what I believe in the under-15s is University's feeder, so the Callaghan 11, which I didn't realise were competing, so that's good to see. Obviously from Callaghan College, so good to see Uni creating a bit of a pathway there with not having a junior club affiliating themselves with the school. That makes sense.
Yeah, mate, it does, and yeah, I suppose it's very tough for them to have a junior club, so yeah, good work, University crew.
They'd be all right if they went on mental age with a couple of boys out there.
Oh, certainly would, mate. Certainly.
Scott Logan, Nathan Hudson, they both qualify surely.
Just before we wrap up the cricket, mate, I got an answer to your question last week.
Which question was that?
Stephen Mace. I've got the information provided from Miss Kath Pink, the Charlestown scorer. Steve Mace, when he finished in 2016-17, had 354 first-grade games. And when he retired at the end of last year, he had a grand total of 386 first grade games, and he compiled 11,136 runs, 290 wickets, and 188 catches.
Lovely work from Kath Pink as always. She's right on the money there. Interesting to hear actually that there was some information around players that have got 600 wickets and 6,000 runs in Newcastle cricket. Can you name one? Or somebody who might be on the cusp of it currently.
I know Sam Webber's close. I know
he is Michael close.
Hill did it at Charlestown, and I think his dad did it, didn't he, as well?
That is correct. That is the trifecta that I had named to me. So pretty rarefied air there. And to think, mate, the way Sam Webber's playing, he could go for another five or six years. He could be the first player to get 800 and 8,000.
Could he be the first one to win a T20 minor premiership, Tom Lockhart's two-day premiership, and over-35s comp all in a year, mate?
Well, no, because they didn't win the T20.
Yeah, but next year, I mean, he's got another 5 years.
Yeah, who knows? I would like to think they would consider this year, if they wrap up the minor premiership, already quite a success. They'll obviously have their eyes on bigger silverware, but as I said, they're written off and they've won the one-day final, they made the T20 final. They look like they're a shoe-in, at least for the semi-finals in the two-day comp. They won the Masters, as you said, with, you know, the Senior Citizens All-Stars. So, yeah, very, very interesting to see what they can do from here. Interesting enough, though, their second grade, I think, are sitting, if not bottom of the ladder, very close too. So, interesting that they can do so much with what is obviously probably a bit of a gap in depth.
Yeah, that's right. And well, they've got talent there, but it seems funny, obviously, if they go back, it's not correlating, but...
Yeah, the other interesting thing you might have noticed last week, Mark Dries is back on deck in first grade.
Yeah, back against one of his former clubs there last week. And
I did hear someone make the, I guess, cynical comment that, it's convenient, just in time to qualify for enough days play for the finals.
Yeah, you got to play... playing days, so five of the last nine playing days or something.
Yeah, so he'll qualify, end up with six, allowing that he plays every day from here, so another bolstering to an already bumper lineup. But what we might do, mate, we might move on from there to the Newcastle District Cricket Player of the Year. No surprises on the man in the lead, but his lead is narrowing. Nathan Price, we'll just run through to the top... we'll go through the top 12, all those players that have polled 20 or more votes so far this year. Nathan Price on 45, Nathan Hudson of University on 37. He's creeping up on him slowly, as is the Sri Lankan superstar, Sash Pusagala. He's up to 36 after picking up some more points on the weekend. Dean Chillingworth, he's been a consistent performer this year with 24. You'd start to think there's a big bunch here, but you'd start to think it's going to be quite an effort with only 4 days of the regular season remaining. To come through and pick up the points. Joe Price, 23. The two big movers, Tom O'Neill and Daniel Arms, both on 23 after the weekend. I can tell you that Daniel Arms wasn't even in double digits before the weekend, and Tom O'Neill was on 10. Tim O'Neill, sorry. We had that typo. We talked about this.
Yeah.
I'm literally reading straight off. You can tell we're going well at 20 to 11 at night. Sam Webber on 22, Jacob Montgomery and Adrian Chad both on 22 as well. Then we have Aaron Bills and Ben Balcombe on 21 and 20 respectively. A couple of interesting notes. Charlestown, three players in the top 10. Walls End with two. No one else featuring multiple players there. Hamwicks obviously have got Sam Webber in 8th and Benny Balcombe in 12th. Come the end of the regular season, we will post the top three vote getters from each club. Assuming that I think every club should have three vote getters. I'll have to check those numbers.
Check the stats, mate.
Yeah, well, might just have to throw Jono to me, but no, they've definitely got it. I'm just having a look at, I know Stockton have, Newcastle City have got three. It might be pretty obvious. So when you see who they are, though, that one of them's only played a couple of games. Waratah's got four. Some of the clubs, Belmont might actually be an interesting one. They'd have three, surely.
Chase Lawson, Marcus.
Belmont's got seven.
Yeah, one of their young fellas got 100 in about round three.
Yeah, Muddle.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's plenty there. I think all the teams. Just to put into a bit of perspective, so far this season across all the games, how many players have picked up a vote? At least one vote. So let's put this into perspective. On any given weekend, there's 12 teams with 11 players. There's 132 players. But, you know, we've only got 15 points each week. So, I mean, if everyone got a point, that'd be 132. How close to that do you think we'd be?
I reckon about 71.
80 players.
Oh,
so we've got, of that, we have players that have scored 5 or less votes is 40 players.
Yeah, 1 week wonders, mate.
Yeah, well, there's one person I'm looking at in particular here in the 5-vote category that's polled in 4 different weeks. No, 3 different weeks, sorry. But yeah, so it's different courses, mate. So yeah, there's plenty there. But yeah, as I said, we'll publish a top 3 or 4 from each club at the end of the season just so that everyone can see where it wound up. And we'll probably post the top 20 or so as well. Come at the end of the season, so and we're really pushing for a sponsor for that next year. So if someone wanted to come on board with something small as a prize, that'd be great. Positive Survey Solutions, you know, $50 cash prize at the end of the year or something.
Free survey.
Yeah, I don't know how useful that'll come in for most people, but that's that. The final thing before we move on from cricket is the Matt's Mowing and Maintenance Player of the Round for first grade. Now I've used the term round a bit loosely in this one. It's player of the fortnight, I guess, but it was pretty hard to get past this bloke for my mind. He picked up absolute bucket load of votes across last weekend, and that is Daniel Arms. So congratulations to Daniel Arms on his win there. I think he's pretty deserving in that one, Jared.
Yeah, he certainly is, mate. And, yeah, he got plenty of runs, plenty of action, trophies. He had it all, mate, and now gets his lawn, mate.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he's still living at home. Might be Greg's lawn, mate.
Yeah, Greg's lawn and maintenance.
Yeah, well, Greg's done a lot to make sure Daniel's had a good path so he can continue to play cricket in front of him. And maybe that's what Greg's earned. He works hard with his day job too. He works in the same field I do, so I come across Greg a little bit. But congrats again to Daniel, and a big congrats to Charlestown on picking up what is, by my calculations, the fourth piece of silverware handed out in Newcastle Grade Cricket for the year. All right, moving on, we might jump into the, another round ball, but of a bigger variety, the football, if you will, or soccer. We might start off with the Northern New South Wales Football Heritage Cup final and third place playoff that took place on the weekend, mate. We'll start with the third place playoff. A little bit of an upset, you might say.
Yeah, it certainly was, mate. The probably not so big boys versus.
Once upon a time, these guys were a powerhouse almost in the what's now the NPL. They've gone down. They've been in some dark times. They bounced back last year with a semi-final appearance and. Yeah, this obviously shows that they're on the up, and that's West Wall's End. I tipped them to make the semis, mate. I think you went for New Lambton. And West Wall's End have gone out 2-0 winners over Western Workers in the third place playoff. So that'd be a great start to their season, mate. They'd certainly be pretty chuffed with that, I would have thought, in terms of a result, and up at Western as well.
Yeah, they would have, and I suppose give them confidence trying to. Bridge the gap and get a grand final appearance this year, mate. But, you know, Western, not the worst team going around. And, yeah, well done to West Wall's End.
Yeah, exactly right, mate. And they'll be looking to light up Johnston Park in the new FM league this year, certainly going forward. And that'll fill them full of confidence with some of their new signings they've added out there. I feel like I'm singing a familiar tune when we touch on this final, mate. Same result, 2-0 winners, Edgeworth over Lake Macquarie City. My boys couldn't get the job done, and the Eagles, just another piece of silverware in their trophy cabinet, which is surely needing a new wing put on it.
Yeah, that's right, mate. Wouldn't that much space. I think they win everything, don't they? Except, they didn't win the big one last year, but they've got everything else. But, they're going to be there or thereabouts again. I think Lake Macquarie are going to improve again this year, but we'll obviously touch on that in a few weeks. But they've done well getting to the final, mate, and yeah, just come up against a really good, powerful opposition.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it certainly was. Western couldn't go back to back. They didn't quite make that final, as we said, and Edgeworth got the result. And they're going to be a powerhouse again. And yeah, I think Lake Macquarie will certainly be aiming to improve. I saw an article that they've obviously managed to hang on to the Walker brothers, and Sam will be their captain this year. So looking for him to lead from the front. He was the player of the year. He's the golden boot. He was, mate, the only thing he didn't do was take him to the finals, and I think this year might be the year. And we might, I guess we'll have a bit of a preview of the Northern New South Wales NPL with the season imminently upon us, I guess, mate, too.
Yeah, that's right. I think I've been watching their Facebook page. It's, 2 weeks to go, mate. So, yeah, it's getting very exciting. I know Reece Cooper, he scored a wonder goal on the weekend, mate. He's champing at the bit to get out there.
Yeah, your man crush.
Yeah.
He'll be looking forward to, two Fridays' time up there at the ground that hosted the Heritage Cup, Rockwell Automation Park at Western, starting Hamilton's season with a bang, and they'll be looking to go a couple of spots better than their fifth place finish, but undoubtedly there'll be a few sides looking to improve from their results last year. I think pretty much everyone brought that I'd like to finish first and take out the title again, and all the others below them would be looking to knock them and Edgeworth off as the perennial powerhouses. So it'll be interesting to see, and as you said, it's literally 2 weeks tonight as we record on Thursday night. The season kicks off up at Lyle Car Oval there at Whitebridge, so we might try and have a look. We'll probably have to do it next week, mate, and have a look at our predictions for the NPL season, because obviously the week after we won't be able to do it. Unless you want to do the show from Lyle Car Oval, if I'm around, mate, we might be able to do that. We'll talk logistics and see what we can do.
Yeah, well, watch this space.
Yeah, on that note, mate, we'll move on to the Asian Champions League, and we'll keep it very brief. There's not too much to talk about here. A 4-1 loss to Kashima Antlers. I think it's pretty much as I predicted with conversations with a few people. I think I said 3-1 maybe. Look, we're completely outclassed by the defending champions of the Asian Champions League, and the golfing class showed. It also, the travel, the amount of games we've had, they are fresh and coming straight off what is essentially their first real competitive game of what's been a grueling pre-season for them. So, while we thought we might add some fitness over them, the skill level was just far too high.
It certainly was, mate. If it wasn't for old Mossy between the posts, mate, it could have been a lot worse, but...
Certainly could.
They just goes to the next level, and that's why there's a lot of Aussies get the opportunity to go there, mate. It's a much better competition.
Yeah, it certainly is, mate, and no shame in that result. But that is the end of the Asian Champions League for the Jets for this year, and it'll be another couple of years before we're any chance of seeing that again.
Yes, that's correct, mate.
We might follow on from that and move into the regular season action for the Jets, and a much brighter note. The under-16 side, as Ernie called them, did the job on Friday night. 3-1 winners over Melbourne City. I'll tell you what, Melbourne City started really well both halves, but we weathered the storm, and the boys showed some class. A great performance by Jair, and then the injection of Champness and O'Donovan off the bench was phenomenal and paid in spades. Some great tactical coaching by the great man Ernie Merrick.
Mate, you hit the nail on the head there. They were good. It probably took a little bit by surprise, but, Thurgate and a few of them other boys took their opportunity, mate. Joye had a fat game, and, we got the chocolates and instilled a bit of confidence, I suppose, for the domestic competition.
Yeah, mate, you've got to be a bit careful using that word about South American imports. I don't know if you remember Mario Jardel.
I do, mate, I do.
So, you don't want to be going around calling people fat Brazilians, that's for sure. So a good result, and hopefully some confidence to build on, and we'll try and hang on to those slim mathematical chances that have been glimmered for us by a couple of other results going our way last weekend, but we're going to need a lot more of that, and the boys are going to need to keep on winning. Speaking of keeping on winning, they do play this Sunday, and we'll get into our predictions for this week in a moment, mate. We might just take this point to have a quick look at our Player of the Year standings, and if my memory is correct, we might have a new leader for the first time in a long time.
Forever.
Yeah, I think we're going back to... I think Mr. Georgievski took the lead in about round 9 or 10 from memory, maybe. Definitely by round 12 we had the lead, but now we have that man that was between the sticks against Kashima, Glenn Moss, He's out on 45. Georgevski on 42. Nikolai Topol-Stanley on 40, still hanging on to third place. Dimi Petratos on 34. And the big marquee, Ronnie Vargas, sneaks back into the top five after a great performance, a solid performance against Kashima. So he goes, yeah, as we said, up to fifth. There were a number of players. We had some players that picked up some significant votes. Obviously, Jair and Joey Champness were two that picked up some bolstering votes. Funnily enough, first points of the year for Joey Champness. And Jair, he's crept his way up and he's knocking on the door of the top 10. So, look, at the moment, we've got, you know, any number of players within striking distance of that top five. And we're still, I mean, eight games to go. And, you know, if we somehow scrape into the final, maybe another one or two after that. As Mossy's shown with his run over the last, the last eight games, he's picked up 32 of his 45 votes in the last eight games. So you can go on a run in those eight games. Anyone's essentially within striking distance pretty much if you're in the starting lineup.
Yeah, that's right. He obviously had his little injury there for a couple of weeks too, mate. So he's come back bigger and better, and he's doing some wonderful things in between the sticks.
He certainly is, mate. Yeah, we've got a bit of depth there at goalkeeper, which is a good thing. I don't know whether we'll see much more of Mossy after this season, but yeah, Lewis Italiano is certainly no mug either. He played quite well in that game against Melbourne City, so was probably unlucky not to be in the points himself, but that is our A-League Player of the Year as it currently stands heading into this weekend's Round 20 fixture. Speaking of Round 20, it kicks off on tomorrow night our time, but tonight as the show is released, Friday night, 7.50, the House of No Steps Cup, Central Coast Mariners versus Brisbane Roar, mate. Yeah, neither of these sides are travelling too well at the moment.
No, they certainly aren't, and yeah, this will be a big crowd, I reckon, at this one, and yeah, I'm going to have to pick our local foes, mate, the Mariners, to get the job done. I think it'll be 3-1.
Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? Well, the Mariners have looked all right in the last couple of games. That draw against Sydney FC last week, they hung on. They didn't create any real opportunities, but they hung on. They didn't look terrible against Wanderers, and I was off Wanderers. I mean, Wanderers obviously turned that up a gear against Adelaide on the weekend, but I'm still not sold on them as a genuine outfit, and they'll probably prove me wrong by winning by six this week or something. But, yeah, as I said, like, just it was very unconvincing. I mean, Sydney only got their goal from a penalty, which spared them, but they looked like they had all the run. And, again, Tommy Orr in doubt for tonight's game. Really raises some questions for me. Brisbane, they were a shell of the team they were the week before when they beat Sydney, but I'm going to go with Brisbane to get it done 2-1, mate. Next up on Saturday, Wellington Phoenix bring a home game to Campbelltown Stadium against Sydney FC. Mate, they've been everywhere. They're in Auckland last week. They got a bumper turnout in Auckland too. And yeah, so this will be interesting to see what sort of crowd they get out of Campbelltown, which will be the home ground in the 2020-2021 season for the new South West expansion side, I understand. Be interesting to see what sort of soccer crowd or football crowd it draws out there for this one-off game. But look, you know, Wellington, not in the worst form, and they're probably, you know, a little bit the surprise packets this year, but Sydney, they'd have some worries after the last 2 weeks against Brisbane and Central Coast.
Yeah, they would, and I think we're sort of lucky that Perth had a draw last week, mate, and
Perth won 4-0 last week, mate.
4-0, geez, what am I looking at? Oh, sorry, I was looking at the score underneath. Yeah, you're right, 4-0. So, yeah, I'd say, minor premiership's out of the race, but probably for our point of view, it'd be good if Sydney could get the result here, but I'm predicting a draw.
Yeah, look, I think this will be a big one. Sydney FC, I think it's a bit of an error from Wellington to bring it over to Sydney. And Sydney FC, obviously, you know, there's no love lost there. X-Man Mark Radan is the coach over at Wellington. And, you know, they'll be looking to get one up over him. They'll have this one marked now for the last 2 weeks. I think Sydney will get it done 2-1 and do the Jets a big favour. Speaking of favours, another team that could do us a favour is Melbourne Victory in the Melbourne Derby at Marvel Stadium on Saturday night. This is the free-to-air Channel 10 game. Yeah, this one, sure to get both sides up, and Melbourne City will be looking to bounce back I think the victory, hopefully for our sake, will be a little bit too strong, and they might get it done 2-0.
Yeah, it's going to be a full house, mate. And yeah, I think victory will get it done 3-1, mate.
3-1. Yeah, I'll be surprised if it's a sellout, with it being at the biggest stadium. Had it been Amy Park, it might have been, but they'll certainly have a bumper crowd there. Speaking of bumper crowds, it's exactly what the doctor's ordering on Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock. The Newcastle Jets, our mighty Jets, host Adelaide United. Adelaide United coming off that surprise loss to the Wanderers in Adelaide. They'll be smarting. The trip over here will certainly not be an easy one for them. The Jets will be hoping to continue some of that free-flowing attack that we saw against Melbourne City last Friday night, mate. Look, this is the final time we do take on Adelaide this season, obviously. We have managed only to get 1 point in our previous two clashes. So we've had a draw, we've had a loss. It's time to get a win.
Yeah, it is, mate. We got our hearts broken at home last time with that late penalty, mate. Yeah, I think, you know, we'll get confidence out of that, you know, Asian Champions League and the result last week against Melbourne City. And yeah, as we keep saying, we need to go on a roll, and I think they will, mate. I think they're going to get it done 2-0 and keep their hopes alive.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-1. Hopefully, I think the key for us, and it seems to have been the key for Adelaide, is to just shut down the our old hometown boy, Craig Goodwin. He's been an absolute standout for them. So hopefully we can shut him down. A big job for Boogs and Topor, especially on the set piece. He's very dangerous, the vertical leap he's got. I'd like to see us play a bit more through Jair as well, maybe to play him through the middle a bit more. He looked really dangerous with a bit more responsibility on his shoulder, so I'm not sure how that fits, but it might be the perfect opportunity with Ronnie Vargas out of action for a few weeks.
Yeah, it will. I know his post-game interview, mate, he said he gained a lot out of that, so yeah, hope him and Dimmy can strike up something, mate, put some fear, and yeah, Champerson and Roy can bang in some more goals.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what structure they go with. I would suggest that Champerson will probably still be coming off the bench, but it'll certainly be interesting who plays where, and hopefully we don't go back to that five-back formation that we played against Kashima, because Paul Benny Kanarovsky, he's been a while between drinks there.
Was that a game in the pool, fish out of water?
Yeah, exactly right, mate. I think the game you're looking for is Marco Polo, mate. But anyway, moving right along, we'll move down to the final game of the round. The Wanderers host Perth Glory at the, I heard someone call it the other day, Soulless Stadium, aka Spotless. Mate, the Wanderers, they might have done Adelaide, but I can't see them beating, I think Popper will have his boys fired up for the trip back. And he might be wanting to leave with a contract signed by Bonavazzia. I would have thought he's eyeing him off. So a win here with, you know, only 8 games to go would certainly do them no harm, especially if their title chasers happen to stumble again.
Yeah, that's right, mate. Your second favourite team, Western Sydney, their confidence will be high, but yeah, I can't see them beating Perth, mate. I think it's going to be 2-1.
I think it's going to be 3-0 to Perth. I think they're far too strong. They're an absolute class outfit. There's a reason they only dropped one game this season. Interestingly enough, if our rough predictions do play out, that would essentially see Newcastle only 3 points out of the finals and only, let me get this right, 5 points out of fourth.
Yes, having a sniff, mate, that's right.
It could be a miraculous turnaround with obviously a lot of water still to go under the bridge, but it's a funny game, and also we could potentially have a for and against that would be better than Melbourne, City, Wellington, and on par with Adelaide if we could win by 2 goals. So we could be in a really good position to really charge home. Obviously, we'd have our work cut out for us, because once we play Adelaide, we obviously then have, you know, the majority of the top teams still to come. But yeah. I still think we're pushing the proverbial uphill, but, you know, I'd like to keep that glimmer of hope. But anyway. We'll quickly run through the night's results from the Andrew Johns and the Laurie Daly Cups on the weekend. It was not a great day for the Andrew Johns Cup side. They went down 38-8 to the Northern Rivers Titans up there at Foster. The Laurie Daly Cup boys, on the other hand, the 18s, they had a better result with a 34-6 win over the Northern Rivers Titans. So splitting the results, hopefully the boys can get a little bit better this week. But that result does see the Knights sitting second in the under-18s, but they are well off the pace. I think they are currently running last in the Andrew Johns Cup. But interestingly enough, there was 6 fixtures and 2 draws in the Andrew Johns Cup last week. So very interesting to see. But this weekend, the Knights, their development squads, head off to... Let me just find the results. They head off to Scone Park to take on the Greater Northern Tigers. The Greater Northern Tigers representing Group 21 and Group 4. So the area from Greta Brankston all the way up to and including Tamworth and surrounds, Gyra, all those sorts of areas. So hopefully they can pick up wins. The game's 12 o'clock and 1:20 on Saturday. Again, everything is streamed through Bar TV Sports and on the CRL New South Wales Facebook pages. So if you can't get up the Scone, make sure to check out the games. Just a quick note, I'll be making my Rugby League first commentary appearance, mate, on Saturday afternoon. I'll be covering the Parramatta Eels versus the Northern Rivers Titans down at Guildford. So looking forward to that. But we'll try and also share the links for the Knights and the Parramatta Eels game on our page. Also in rugby league circles, mate, we've got the Curry Nines this weekend, a big day up at the graveyard.
Yeah, mate, that's right. It's going to be very exciting. I know they had a crappy competition last year, mate, and I think it's building this year, and there's plenty of hotly contested teams, mate. A couple of our favourite boys running around too, possibly, so... Yeah, it's
going to
be a cracker day up there at the graveyard.
Yeah, certainly a bit of a mix, mate. We've obviously got Greta Brankston joining from Group 21, Coogee coming up from eastern suburbs of Sydney, Ava Glasson coming out of the Newcastle and Hunter comp, Budgieway coming up from the Central Coast. Got a few mixed teams, I guess, Newcastle All Blacks and Castlereagh All Blacks. Also the MD, so Mitch Day, I think it is, Memorial Bears. And the Murray Kelly All Stars. So, mate, certainly some interesting teams lining up in terms of that. So, I'm just trying to put some info here on a couple of those teams. So, Newcastle All Blacks obviously are they were the 2018 Aboriginal Knockout Champions, featuring a lot of the boys from out at Macquarie, the Briggs Brothers, and the likes of those. They had Will Smith, who I don't think will be available for this one. But they will have a very talented and elusive side. They'll also won't be scared of contact. Also got, yeah, as I said, they're based strongly around those Smith and Briggs families. So, yeah, they've been around for a while. The All Blacks have been around for about 40 years, started by the earlier generations of those families. So they'll be a strong outfit, mate.
Yeah, that they will, mate. Yeah, they're always perennial in the knockout competitions that run locally. And, yeah, I suppose this suits them down to the ground.
Certainly does, mate. While we're on that note, the Castlereagh All Blacks, they feature a couple of local boys who are pretty connected to Waratah running their show. So the new Waratah side that's re-entering the Newcastle and Hunter Rugby League after a little bit of an absence. They've got, obviously, the men there that I refer to, Jason Boney, who plays in the halves. He's the captain coach of Waratah. He played in the halves for Souths last year in first grade. Josh Griffiths from Maitland, who won the Koori Knockout with Yao. He's in Minnaribba in the recent years, and I think he also played in that Newcastle All Blacks side. A name that you might recognise, mate, Bryden Ramian, younger brother of Jesse Ramian. I'm told his bench is about 180, and he's been playing professional rugby league over in Canada recently. And they've also got Hayden Robinson, who's been described by Dennis Moran as the best young back rower in bush footy currently, so... yeah, certainly, and of course, the final name you'll know in this team, mate, Jerome Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
He's a big and mobile unit, he is, so that'll be a fairly physical side, I would have thought. And the other one that's probably a bit of an unknown is the MD Memorial Bears, so run by the Day family, so... Josh and Luke will be involved in that. They're fairly heavily involved. Josh is a good friend of the show, Troy Lowry. Josh and Luke will be kidding up. It's a memorial team for their brother, Mitch. He's a massive North Sydney Bears fan, so that's hence the reason they're the Bears. But they've got some decent names here, mate. They've got Baz Tafua, Harry Saker, who played for Poland and also for He's played for Penrith previously and over in the Super League. Liam Foran, the brother of Kieran Foran. So plenty of experience there, mate. In terms of it, he's been playing for Cessnock and obviously was a pretty strong footballer in his day. He's played on only about 20 first grade games, between 25 maybe, between the Super League and the NRL. Melbourne and Manly predominantly over in the NRL, I believe. You might know a bit more, mate. You're a Melbourne fan.
Yeah, he's... I don't know his exact stats, but I know he had a run around. But
yeah,
that's about all I can add.
Yeah, very helpful, mate. And then some other footballers have been around the traps in Newcastle, the likes of Mick Deacon, Kev Picton, and Matt Hay. Obviously, Mick Deacon's a good friend of the show. He was the halfback, captain, coach, extraordinaire, everything else at Greta Brankston. They've got a very strong side as well. Luke Mercer of mate. Played for Maitland and East Maitland over the years. So, they'll be a strong side as well. So, really looking forward to seeing how they go. And they'll probably be the side that I'll be cheering for, mate. Rocking the Bears colours and having a few connections to Troy and the show. As you said as well, obviously, we've also got the local first grade side, Central, Curry, Maitland, Cessnock. And, of course, our great friends, the Aberglass and Ants, as we touched on. Definitely a great day out. Games from 10 o'clock through till, I think the last pool game's at 4:40 and the final bit 6:30. Absolutely belter of a day of football and plenty of good opportunities for a beer on the hill there. It'd be great to see you, mate. Who are you tipping?
I'm going to go for my boys I picked last year, mate, the Coogee Wombats.
Yeah, mate, I'm going to go... I'll put the Memorial Bears as my dark horse, and I'll go with the Freak and the Curry Bulldogs as my favourites to win. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Again, we don't have any information really on the Marie Kelly All-Stars. They played last year, but, obviously all the first-grade local clubs will be quite strong. But, as I said, great day of football on there. Plenty of football, 7-minute halves, so nice short and sharp turnarounds. Definitely worth going and checking out. Moving on to the other oval ball, mate, we'll punch through this really quickly. Some results here from some recent sevens. It's pretty much a lay week this week in the rugby union, but there was two big sevens on this last week. You were out at Lake Macquarie, mate. How was the standard of competition?
It was a pretty good standard. Not as many Newcastle teams. There was a few scattering of teams that have been just sort of dragged together, but... the perennial powerhouses from Sydney did really well, and yes, it was a surprise in the quarterfinal with Island Breeze getting knocked out by Randwick, mate. But yeah, Warringah played Warringah in the final.
So Warringah won.
And Warringah, yeah, they just snuck home, but yeah, they got the A team beat the Rats 19-7.
So Warringah won one.
Yeah, Warringah won beat the Warringah 2, yes.
Yeah, lovely.
And it would have been a bit of an inquiry if the twos won, but
if you taught a great friend of the show, Nathan Price, he'll regale you with a story about how when he led the CHS 2 side, they beat the CHS 1. So, can happen.
Can happen, yeah. Well, didn't on this day, but obviously Southern Districts, they come up, mate, for this one, and they won the women's.
Yeah.
22-7 over... Ramwick's women's team, and that was pretty thrilling, but well done to Southern Districts.
And I understand Nelson Bay continued their trophy gathering form.
Mate, 3 weeks in a row, they're on fire, they must be doing something right up there, but they won the bowl, mate, 21 points to 14.
They'll have enough cash to sign Adam Ashley Cooper when he gets cut from the Waratahs.
Yeah, or Kyle Michael Hunt, you never know.
The way he played, he's not getting cut, mate. So speaking of the Waratahs, quickly before we get into the sevens by the sea, great to see local youngster Harry Johnson Holmes from the Wanderers Club originally, I believe, starting for the Waratahs in their first Super Rugby game, so well done to him. But we'll move right along, mate. The sevens by the sea, hosted by the Lakes Rugby Club, also known as North Lakes, down there at Budgerwoi on the Central Coast, and there's a number of our local sides that went on down there, and the hosts, they made it through to the plate final, and they took on Hunters Hill from the Sydney Subbies comp, and Hunters Hill were way too strong for them. They ran away 29-12 winners in that one. But probably the shock of the day, Gosford coming through to take on Hamilton in the final. I think Hamilton would have been not unbackable, but geez, they know how to lose a final at the moment. Hamilton, they went down 17-15. They scored on the bell, had a chance to level it up, and I believe sent it extra time, but they missed an absolute dolly of a conversion. About five to the left of the post, and yeah, that was all she wrote. And Gosford, the winners there, so congratulations to the boys in red. I had to double check it first when I watched the final. I thought it was Waratah.
Yeah, well, that's right. But I believe I know you said they lost another final, Hamilton, but I believe that's two out of three because they lost the Crescent
Head Sevens,
I believe, 1917
or 1715 as well. So that'd be three out of three they've lost
then, mate. I don't know about
your
mess. Oh, they got hammered in the middle
one, that's what I meant,
like they... Hammered by
cards, I hear. Yeah. Anyone that wants to question that, please just go to Bar TV Sports and watch the replay. That was a very tongue-in-cheek joke. Mate, that's the rugby action. There's not too much, a few lower grade trials floating around this weekend, but we're not going to go too in-depth for them, otherwise we'll be here for another hour. So that's pretty much the sports action this week. That's episode 52, all but wrapped. Make sure to check out our social media channels, SportsCastleAU on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Interact with us. There'll be some more content and things popping up as we go, trying to do it in between, you know, holding down a day job and all sorts of other things as we go. What else we got, mate? Our sponsors, Matthew's Mowing and Maintenance, Primac Sports Cards and Collectibles, and supporters of the show as well. We've got Aerolax Australia, who's one of our sponsors. The Rugby League Academy have been good with us when we've had them involved. Bar TV Sports, the boys there, great coverage of local sport. Am I missing anyone, mate?
I think
I've hit the nail on the head for once. I've kept it pretty sweet. All right, mate. Well, that's all of our sponsors. Make sure you get around them. Use them for the opportunities that are there. And big thanks to you, mate. You've made it to 51. We've talked everything from cricket to soccer to fat Brazilians today, so that's been excellent. I appreciate your time. I appreciate everyone tuning in. And I guess we'll come back and do this again next week unless we find something better to do.